Is that recording?
I think. Am I louder than I was? I don't.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to my first panel, maybe your first panel, of the North Carolina Comic Con 2016. This is going to be. This is My Funny Valentine, which was my chance to talk to my favorite comic book people about love and romance and gushy stuff. And thank you so much for coming to this.
I know it's the panel I would be at if I wasn't on it. So.
Okay. Afua is going to be joining us. She is super popular and super nice, and she is probably saying a polite goodbye to a fan. And I sent my brother to get her, and he is super nice as well, so he's probably waiting in line to interrupt her. These things happen.
Double niceness.
But trust me, she is worth the wait as well. But we're going to start with Teenie Howard, who I selected, one, because I love you, and two, because of The Secret Loves of Geek Girls, which, if you have not picked this up, it is amazing. It's an anthology from Dark Horse. It's a mix of essays, fiction, comics, all about girl love, and it's all in here. We've got trans girls, we've got poly girls, we've got bi girls, we've got all across the spectrum of gender and sexuality, and Teenie wrote this. I'm not mad, but you broke my little heart into pieces. Story about fan fiction and romance, and it was who's had, but it was still love, and so you got invited.
So, well, thanks.
Teenie, tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, well, and I was also going to say, I hope that while I'm here, I can talk a little bit about my work on Power Rangers Pink, which has a lot of kissing in it, but just hasn't happened. The kissing hasn't happened yet.
And
keep
I see
getting
Afua.
The book. I promise there's kissing. There's also, when I was at New York Comic Con, everyone that came up to me to talk to me about Power Rangers Pink that were like, or like hardcore Power Rangers fans were like, are you going to deal with Kimberly's letter?
Yes.
And the answer is yes, but, which is like one of those heartbreaking romance things. As far as my story in Secret Loves, yeah, I wrote a piece about my first serious relationship and how it was with a girl that I wrote a lot of fan fiction with, which was, one, great, because there's nothing better than having an awesome interest with someone you're dating. Like, when you two are dating and you really like each other and the chemistry's there and you love to have the same silly, nerdy hobby, there's, like, no better feeling. So that was great. But we were both really young and both dealing with being young, how sexuality makes you crazy when you're young and how being queer can be hard to deal with when you're young. And we had a hard time sometimes separating reality from fiction when it came to the characters that we were writing or role playing at that time, and about how we grew up and became different people. And I had a lot of fun with it. I got to I realized in writing that piece that there were other characters that we had always, we'd always compared ourselves to characters we really loved and wrote fan fiction about, like Louis and Lestat from Interview with the Vampire. Those are like, that was like our favorite. And that's still like, my Vampire Chronicles are like my favorites ever. I still always will identify with Louis. At the same time, writing the piece, I realized that there were other characters we identified and didn't even mean to, like being bisexual and kind of feeling like rock stars like you do when you're a teenager. We always, we were David Bowie and Mick Jagger. in the sense that, like, I was this like willowy, awkward, weird forest witch kid, and she was this like little ball of sunshine and energy. We were Daphne and Apollo. And in the sense that, we both liked to, wear masks and capes and run around the Ren Faire in secret. We were like every princess from a story who dresses up like a brigand so she can go run around and feel detached from her life. So it was cathartic. Like, I wasn't broken up about it before, but once I wrote it, I was like, that was good stuff to get out there. And I hate writing confessional pieces. Hate it. I wrote that piece like 3 years ago on a dare from a friend who wanted me to submit it to a literary magazine, and the literary magazine like never got back to me after like 2 years. So when Hope Nicholson, who's the editor of Secret Loves, had kind of put out a call in a group of like friends and comic women that I'm a part of, I was like, yeah, I have an essay. It's about fan fiction and dating. Does that fit? And she was like, that's exactly what I'm looking for. So she loved the piece, and it got in, and I'm grateful for it because I'm not only in the book alongside women like, you know, Marguerite Bennett, who, if you haven't read this book, her piece in it is called Minas Tirith, and it will rip you apart. It is every bit as emotional and damaging as everything else she writes. And I also get to be in there with women like, Trina Robbins and Margaret Atwood, who are legendary women who have gone before me and paved the way for me to do what I love to do for a living. So, yeah.
Cool. And can people buy copies of that book at your table, Tini?
I have one copy of this book at my table this weekend.
People have one.
I want to see which of you is
I want to do like a silent auction and see who will pay the most for it. But no, I have one copy of this book. While we're on the topic of romance, I do have copies of the Oath Anthology, which is an anthology of LGBT superhero original stories that I have a really smoochy piece in. If you're into romance, you can buy that and Power Rangers and other stuff. But no, I have only one copy of this book.
Okay. I'll be picking that up because I'm an avid consumer of all this.
Yes. Thank you
awesome.
So much.
I will happily save it for Shatterstar.
And now I'd like to introduce Afua Richardson, who is one of the most popular panelists here at the North Carolina Comic Con for years and years and years running.
So
you're about to find out why. She is a phenomenal artist. She's been doing covers for X-Men 92, and she's got some Scott Snyder projects. And this week, did anyone pick up the Black Panther World of Wakanda? Except me, because yes, it's so good, highly recommended. She did the cover and she did the art for the backup story with the origin of one of the characters. And in addition to physical art, you are an amazing musical artist. You've got a Nina Simone Award, right?
Yep.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks, Doug.
Well,
yes.
I mean, no, you said I've listened to your music.
Award.
But I didn't know you had a Nina Simone Award. That's amazing.
It was sort of crazy to even, it was just like my name, Nina Simone, in one containment. Like, are you kidding? She's so iconic that it's like staring into the sun. Like, I couldn't even imagine that someone would want to give me that award. I was absolutely honored. And the person who was on the board, strangely enough, when I was a singer, when I was off tour, I was a bartender. And he would come into the bar, and I didn't know what he did or who he was. He was just a nice guy, and I kept in touch over the years, and I told him what I was doing, and he was just like, "Are you kidding? Well, we want to nominate you for something," and he was just like, "What? what are you talking about?" And told me which foundation he was a part of, and he was like, "Yeah, you know, you're mentoring students, you're working at Marvel, DC, and Image as a penciler, inker, and colorist. Mm-hmm. You're a Black woman, you're an activist, you're doing events, you're on tour, you've shared stages with Parliament Funkadelic and Melvin Van Peebles, you've been on Broadway, like that's a lot of stuff." And I was like, well, when you put it that way.
I will say, before you got here, people were like, well, where's it from? And I was like, see, it feels like an actual magical girl, so she's exactly where she needs to be at any time. This is what I'm talking about. She's an actual real-life magical girl.
Yes.
It's been a crazy magical adventure, and I'm like, I'm still alive!
You're still here! You made it!
it wasn't always great, and everybody has their stories, so I won't like throw a million sub stories at you, but sometimes I would be in these situations, and I was just like, man, this might be it. This might be the end of the line for me. I hope that I've accomplished as much as I possibly could, and then I would make it out. I was like, yes, magic! Magic wins again! You know, and I'm just super grateful for my friends and peers and so on to lead me along this crazy journey.
Good, well, thank you for being here. Let's move on to another one of your friends, Jeremy Whitley, who is so productive writer.
Seriously?
Yes, so many things, but some of the things that I think are super relevant to hear is anyone reading Raven the Pirate Princess? Yes, because it's so good. So many loves, so many women, so many kinds of women, so many kinds of loves. It is adorable and wonderful, and it's very like kind of teen YA, totally into it. And the other reason that I wanted to make sure that you came on was last year, did you guys pick up any of the Secret Wars tie-ins? He wrote the Secret Love story about, yes, I know we're going there. an alternate reality where Misty Knight and Danny Rand were married and just on a date and hanging out and doing their thing. And it was one of the most real pictures of marriage that people have seen, and a lot of the internet loved it, and I loved it. And so thank you for coming on, Jeremy. Tell me a little about what your one of your love stories.
Yeah, so that was a cool thing for me. It was the first thing I'd ever done for Marvel, and it was an interesting situation where they sort of, I'd been hassling Tom Brevoort about getting something over there, and he'd been passing Princeless stuff around, and one of the editors contacted me about, and she's like, oh, I'm doing this anthology for Secret Wars, would you be interested in doing a story? I was like, yeah, cool, what is it? And she's like, oh, it's like romance stories with superhero characters. And I was like, yeah, I'd absolutely be into doing that. And she was like, okay, you know, just sort of send me some ideas. And the first thing I sent was Misty Knight and Danny Rand story, because I love Misty Knight and I love Iron Fist. And that was like, yeah, if I only get to write one Marvel story, these are the characters I want to write about. And I also like to hedge my bets, like threw in Luke Cage and Jessica Jones story, and I think I had one other one in there. I don't remember what was in the initial pitch. And she said, oh, I really like these. Now, it's Secret Wars, so it's alternate reality stuff. You can pitch whatever you want, and they don't have to be characters that really have a romance, or it doesn't have to fit into continuity. And I said, okay, well, just so you know, you're getting a Kate Bishop and America Chavez pitch from me. That's coming shortly. And I pitched that story. I wrote that story. And then that story ended up getting canceled because America Chavez can only exist in one place at once, because there's only one of her in all the multiverse. And she was busy in Kieran Gillen's amazing Siege book, which was not going to get moved around for me. So somewhere there is a story that almost got drawn where Kate and America smooch.
She was in Kate Love's Secret War story.
Yeah, after. So they leave Siege and go into that story.
And then, okay.
Yeah. So you can blame
break continuity for kisses. Always do this.
And so that got canceled after I had already written it. It had been approved. I'd been paid, which was cool. she was like, okay, are you interested in doing another story? Obviously, this one's not going to get published, so you know we still need to fill that gap. Would you be interested in doing the Danny and Misty story that you'd pitched? And I was like, yeah, obviously. I'd love to do that story. Yeah, I wrote a story.
You need to write more fan fiction for money? All right, I guess.
I got to write a story about two superheroes who, you know, had been together for a while and had a kid and were trying to figure it out, and it had gotten to a point where, you know, they were safe. They were inside this sort of walled city that there are creatures outside of, and you know, they were trying to figure things out. And it's about them going on a date and it not quite working until the restaurant gets attacked by a dinosaur and they team up to punch out a T-Rex. Yes. Because that's what Danny Rand's obvious reaction is to a T-Rex, is to punch it.
Yes.
So he throws Misty at it and Misty hits it and he punches it. So so that's my romance story is... It's a metaphorical T-Rex story. So.
And at the end of the table, we have Kaz Cosplay, who is not a writer, but is the best of us. She is a fan. She is a very smart fan who loves this and ingests this and synthesizes this and thinks about this so much better than I think about this. So thank you for coming, Kaz. Tell me a little bit about the love stories you're liking right now.
Well, I am loving that I'm right here right now, even though I still feel like... I'm a consumer, you're the producer, so before I get into love, I would like to talk about the love that I have for the things that you create. I have been a lifelong fan. I am 42 years old, so this goes back to the 70s and the original Super Friends and all that. I have loved comic books since I was a child, even though my mother thought I would outgrow it, and I got a master's degree in literature. I wanted to write my master's on Superman, Supermirror of the Ages, and Lois Lane as a feminist icon, And my advisor said, we don't have anybody who can review that, so write something boring and traditional by a dead white man. And I was like, okay. But so I love what you produce. Obviously, I love it because I wear it, I breathe it. You know, I only thing I watch on TV is superhero based, and I have a gigantic comic book collection. When it comes to love, I was thinking about that recently. I've been watching Young Justice. Yay, season 3 is coming. I just finished watching it, and spoiler for anyone who hasn't seen it, too bad, the show ended several years ago. When Wally West apparently dies, I was heartbroken. And then to go along with that, Green Lantern in the animated series was probably one of the best love stories, sustained, developed love stories in animation, in like superhero animation, with Aya and Razor, the Red Lantern, who was full of hate. And the power of love actually changed his life and actually made Aya like more than she was designed to be by the Guardians. And of course, she also dies. There's something extremely painful yet satisfying about those sorts of stories, because if you do get your happily ever after, that's awesome. It's this wonderful completion of this journey and this struggle, but then they can go on a super awkward date, and that can be fun, you know. And I think if any of us have consumed fan-produced works like fan fiction, there's a definite love for the sort of domestic story, the sort of after they've gotten together, here's day-to-day life domesticity. But you can only have that for so long. There has to be conflict to move a story forward. Yeah. That's one of the reasons that we're like, kiss, damn it, kiss, whenever we're reading something or watching something. And then they kiss, but if they stay happy for too long, we could lose interest. And so we want conflict, and then we want them to kiss again. So I consume a lot of these out of my love of these characters, the conflict, the resolution, and how it helps their characters grow. I'm dressed as Shatterstar from X Factor, David.
Peter David.
Thank you. I blanked on his name. His run, X Factor Volume 2, Shatterstar was brought out of the dusty closet of Marvel, and his first appearance, it was revealed that all that subtext from the late 80s, early 90s between him and Richter was in fact canon, and that Richter was bisexual at the very least. If not, he may have realized he is actually gay now. And Shatterstar was written as omnisexual, and he just likes attractive people, but he has this very strong romantic intellectual heart connection to Richter. So while he is very interested in sexually experimenting with everyone who's of interest to him, his connection is to one person. And he said, thought it was a beautiful line that was written, where he said, as much as I want to try things with other people, none of these experiences have any meaning unless you are there to share them with me. Mm-hmm. And Richter's response, coming from sort of a not alien viewpoint, was, so you want threesomes?
which literally
was what he was asking for.
We could do like an entire panel on their relationship. Like, yes. that is my favorite Marvel team book ever.
Yes.
Not just that relationship in the book, but like all of the relationships. The fact that like, and Peter David does such a good job in that run, yes, of playing with like the metaphors of being, having superpowers and being in love. Like, there's Jamie Madrox, who can literally make multiples of himself and literally go after different women, and does, and it causes problems, but not in like a silly zany way, and like an actually really heartbreaking way. And the women who are parts of that, instead of fighting each other like Betty and Veronica style, like realize it and become friends and become closer about it. Richter and Shatterstar, it's not just like, okay, like, they get together, it's, they deal with the fact that like one of them can literally go to other realities. And it's like, people joke about having like the zip code rule, but right, it's like the reality rule. Like, is it cheating if you're in another reality? And that Shatterstar, or that Richter, is literally his anchor.
Right.
Like, literally when he teleports, Richter is what he teleports to. He's his, like, he's the other. And like, there's just so much good stuff in that run about romance.
Dealing with the complexities of being in a non-heterosexual relationship with someone who Richter appears to be struggling a little bit with, whether or not he defines himself as bisexual or gay, or maybe he's just shatter star sexual. We don't know.
Yeah.
And star is literally, I want to try everything. He's like a kid in the Adam and Eve candy store. He wants to try a little bit of everything, but he has this companion who Richter is more traditional. He wants more of a monogamous relationship. And so that conflict is really drives a lot of their development as characters that I really, really love.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that because of them, we were able to get Batwoman out there, Billy and Teddy from Young Avengers, also adorbs, love them so much.
They're great. So. But it's great to know like how they're two superhero queer relationships that are completely yes. different. Like Billy and Teddy are like the, like, I'm gonna date myself here, but like they're like the Zach Morris and Kelly Kapowski of the superhero world. Like they're like a perfect, beautiful teenage couple. And it's great. It's great that there is that like teenage dream couple. Those people, you know, it's like, oh, they're everyone's known they were gonna get married since freshman year, and they're a gay couple. And then, you know, in the same world, you have Richter and Shatterstar who like don't have a lot of happy moments together, not because they're not very in love, but because they have a lot to figure out. And because they live in a different world, and because they're adults, and because Richter has a past with women. Like, and those women aren't villainized, they're not demonized, but you do see them experience being like, you know, I care about you, but like, but I'm hurt. Like, it's tricky stuff to write a female character being like, when we were together, did you not know or were you lying to me?
Right.
Like, that is tricky, tricky stuff to write. And I think it's really important when we're talking about not just romance in the superhero world and comics in general, but specifically queer romance, which is very near and dear to my heart. I think the hearts of everyone up here, that you get your Zach Morris and Kelly Kapowski, like sweetheart teenage dream characters, but then you also get grown-ups who don't always have happy relationships. And like, you get,
that's
fine. Yeah, it's that thing of like, well, on one hand, like dead lesbians in media is a serious problem. On the other, like, I'm a queer woman. I want to write queer female characters who have bad endings because I like writing bad endings. Like, I want to be able to write characters like me who experience pain and experience loss and get hurt without contributing to the dead lesbian problem.
Yeah, I think that's been a big problem with straight white guys like myself writing queer romances is they're like, all right, now they're together, and then I don't know what do two gay types do together? What are they? And then it just, you know, and then they just and it just kind of, they're like, all right, I guess maybe we kill one of them. I don't know what else to do. And you know, that's, it's ridiculous. But it's one of those things that, like, when people are writing romances they don't know anything about and they don't understand, a lot of times they go, all right, well, what's a great romance? Romeo and Juliet. We're going to make them Romeo and Juliet, but, like, gay Romeo and Juliet. And there's a lot of gay Romeo and Juliets out there now, and I feel
Captain
like...
Bucky.
That just means you have to put
Sorry, Peggy, but you're I love you guys too.
In your story, so that 100% of your gay characters don't die.
It's literally like there's honestly, there's worse ways to for romances to end than one person dying. Right. Like
somebody leaving, like, betrayal.
Yeah.
There's like, so many complexities to relationships because people are complicated.
Or like, to, you know, I don't want to say to play devil's advocate because everyone hates that phrase, but at the same time, like, part of normalizing romance and queer romance is that the romance isn't always the focus of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I don't know. What I'll say is this. I have a piece coming out in December. It's my first DC Comics work, and it's a backup in Shade the Changing Girl number 3, and I'm really, really excited about it. But it is not a happy story, because I didn't want to write a happy story, because, you know what? Young Animal is like a crazy, weird, fun place to play. And when one of the, you know, godfathers of the kind of music that got you through your teenage years lets you write a comic in his playground, you write angry, sad stuff sometimes. And I wrote an angry, sad piece, and I'm very proud of it. But like, being a queer woman who wants to write what I want to write, sometimes I worry about what I'm contributing as an individual versus what I'm contributing to a sociological narrative.
I think it's really difficult because
the political sphere is getting like wrapped into fiction where everyone wants to see themselves in the best light possible. Mm-hmm. But we also have to make the story interesting. And so therefore we can't just have, you know, this super pristine, perfect character that has no flaws, no problems, and no, you know, obstacles to overcome, because that's not a story. That's just a description. And it's unrealistic. So we're challenged to make these archetypes that are, you know, representing what it is that we want to say and what we know to be true. You know, and each character is not always going to fit. Like, in Black Panther and World of Wakanda, it's sort of interesting because there are two stories in the book, and one is talking about Ayo and Anika, who are in the Dora Milaje, and they are the royal guard to the Black Panther. They are like the brick wall between the king and the people. They are badass women who train and fight, and Anika is a captain. She's trained, she's disciplined, she's been there for a while, and Ayo's like the newcomer, like, you're not so tough, maybe. And so there's this like rivalry between them, not to give away spoilers. And so like,
is this a story that Roxane Gay tweeted about with hot lesbian action? Yes. I feel like Roxane Gay spoiled that before you got the chance.
Yes. And they have thought bubbles, and the thought bubbles break my heart. Like the speech bubbles are, I'm the boss, and you're not doing it, and the thought bubbles are, don't walk away, I'll miss you. And it's, oh God, yes.
Because it's so true. It's like, you know, when you're in love with someone, you find that mirror, you find what it is about you that you love in them. And it sounds a little narcissistic, but it's true. It's just like, wow, you're all of these things. And it just reminds you of that part of yourself that you're just like, yeah, I would do these things, you know, if I were awesomer. And you bring that out of each other. But with these two women, they're young women, and Anika doesn't recognize that she's so much like her, that it's like, no, I don't want to see this in myself. You're kind of amazing. And it's just so beautiful. It's like, it's like watching an amazing romance in the schoolyard. Only there's fighting and sticks and kicking.
Yeah. All the best ones have right? Sticks and kicking
so
and fighting.
I hate cutting you guys off, but we have time for one Q&A from the audience.
Oh gosh, sorry.
We rambled our entire time away. I am so sorry.
So who wants the one question? If not, I will do it. I see.
Ask it.
Okay. You get it.
Is it shipping? I love shipping.
I have so many ship questions I didn't even ask.
Oh my God.
As an aspiring comic writer and artist, how do you know not to make too much romance while still integrating romance into it?
Ooh. Okay, so for the podcast recording, the question is, how do you balance out integrating romance with dominating the story with romance?
Ooh. I guess it depends on what kind of story you want to tell. Like, every piece of information that you put in your story, it either moves the story forward or reveals something about the character. Now, if romance is your primary objective, and that's an integral part of moving the story forward, go for it. But if you feel that it's just these extra moments where it doesn't reveal anything new, then you might want to consider cutting it back and, you know, come up with the bones of your story. Like, does this move this along? Does this scene, like, reveal to my reader, like, this is the kind of person that they are. This is the kind of being that they are. This is, you know, because this moment happened, you know, now this other moment in the story makes sense.
I would recommend if you want to read a good depiction of a complicated love story, Strangers in Paradise would be my number one. There's something in there for everyone. There's unrequited love, there's fulfilled love, there's queer love, there's depression and redemption, and the characters are incredibly complex, and you hate them at points and you love them at points, and you wish they would get together, but then you don't want them together. And it's a fantastic, it's a series, it's in hardback right now, actually. The local Durham Library carries it, so yay. Strangers in Paradise.
Yeah, and I think that's such a great example. We have like the exact same taste in comics. I think one of the things about that too is that the romance really is the story. It's like, what's Strangers in Paradise about? And it's like, it's about two women and whether or not they get together. That's really the entire plot of the story. But there's also like, mafia stuff.
Spies.
There's assassins. There's cancer.
Depression.
There's like,
and
it's like a soap opera.
It is a soap opera.
But like,
it is amazing.
It's, yeah, like, I mean, but at the same time, like, the romance is the plot. And I think if you have that, if you're looking at characters and you're like, my passion is to write about these two characters getting together, I've been in that place. Mm-hmm. And I figure out sometimes, like, I'm a sucker for a good duo, not even necessarily a romance. I love a good romance, but I also love a great, I love a great teacher and student. I love Batman and Robin. Like, mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for just a great pair and how they work together. And what I often do is if I come up with this archetype idea for a pair that I want to see together, be it romantic or not, I figure out like why, like what are the themes of that relationship that excite me and how, what's the story that I could use to explore those themes? So like, right now I'm writing a Magdalena series, and it's really great because I get to write one of those things I love so much, which is female mentorship. I get to write an older woman guiding a younger one, and they don't always get along, and it's like, the thing I compare it to most is Batman Beyond. It's like this grizzled old chick and this like young, spunky chick, and it's just like, they're trying, one is trying to get the other to like, if you're gonna pick up my mantle, here's how you do it right, and stop pissing me off every 5 minutes. But like that relationship and like them being a successful teacher-student relationship is so important to me that all I want to do is throw challenges in their way. And so you can use that. You can use your desire for a character relationship to drive the story. But, you know, think about what way you want to contain them. You know, fiction, we play with this all the time. Like, do we want them to be mech pilots, or do we want them to work at a coffee shop together? Or do we, you know, what do we want them to do? What kind of obstacles do we want to throw in their way? And or you can just do Strangers in Paradise and throw everything from the mafia to cancer in their way and say, screw it, this looks fun. And you still end up with an amazing story at the end.
Can I ask a shipping question? I want to know everyone's on the panel's favorite and least favorite ship in popular media.
Canon or like off the wall? Like,
I'd go for it, whatever. Well, I would say that my... one that's super popular, this was a question that Matt threw out, that's super popular but I don't get, is Cyclops and Jean Grey. I do not like them. They're Mary Sue, too Mary Sue, too Gary Stu, too great, too amazing, and nah.
That's why Wolverine's always running interference.
Yeah.
I think that the Cyclops and Jean Grey thing has been picked up by too many other different media and types of things. I think if you look at like the original X-Men stories, especially after Jean comes back from the dead, there's this whole like, everything is pushing them together, they're supposed to be together, and the best part of that story is that Jean's like, I don't know, like that, this seems weird, I don't think the whole universe should be pushing us together. Oh, you kind of were with a woman that looked exactly like me, that's weird. Also, I guess, like, we're with like a me that wasn't me, but was actually the Phoenix Force pretending to be me, and that's weird. No.
And then sometimes Emma Frost like brain blasts Scott to make him think he's with Jean when he's actually with Emma, because it's kind of kinky like that. It's just meh.
Yeah, my favorite I've already given away is Kate Bishop and America Chavez, because I love Young Avengers and I love that duo, and that Kate, throughout the first several books of Young Avengers, where it's, you know, her and Billy and Petty and Iron Lad and Patriot, is always the one that puts everybody in their place, is always the one that's in charge, regardless of having the least training. She's always the most on top of things, and then America shows up and just shuts her down every time. Like, every time Kate thinks she's got things in hand, America's like, huh, no. And like, that dynamic works so well, and the fact that America always calls her princess really, really gets me.
So Han Solo, right? Like, ugh.
Yeah.
I will say, like, there are ships that I don't get, but, you know, in the pursuit of ladies and gentlemen having a good time, I don't mind anyone just smashing two people together because they think it's hot. That's fun. Do like you. You're not going to hurt anyone. Yeah, like, do you. Make them, like, pick up your Barbie dolls and make them kiss. Whatever. So there are things that I don't get because I like the relationship better platonically, but that doesn't mean I have a problem with anyone doing that. I will say, like, if I had been asked the question Jeremy had asked, of like, okay, you know, you can write some Marvel kissing, my answer would have been almost the same as yours. It would have been Richter and Shatterstar or Luke and Jessica. Like, Luke and Jessica are my, like,
God, I love them. Like, I love them so much. It has nothing to do with the fact that I really identify with Jessica Jones and Mike Calder. So good looking.
I will.
But I've loved them since Heroes for Hire a whole lot. As Starships, I don't get. I don't know. I don't really get Cap and Bucky because I love Batman. I love the original Batman and Robin, Bruce and Dick so much. And their relationship as like master and student is so important to me. Mm-hmm. And I really just think that in so many ways, Cap and Bucky are similar to that. Actually, I guess Cap and Bucky are more like Bruce and Jason.
Yeah.
But like to me, that is like, if I had the chance to write Cap and Bucky and they were like carte blanche, write whatever you want, you can write them going at it like bunnies if you want, I think I would still just write him like being like a big brother and like a teacher.
Yeah, ships I'm against are basically anything that involves an older man sexualizing a teenage girl is like out for me.
Yeah, like Wolverine and Jubilee I never got into.
Fua, close us out. Yes, Fua, get out.
Please get out the shit, girl.
It's sort of interesting because I have an ambivalence towards T'Challa and Storm, mm-hmm. because they're so stoic and they're so regal that you almost don't know who they are as individuals. It's like, who are they? Like Wolverine, we know. We know what kind of person he is. We know what he'd say to Barr. Storm, it's like her personality, because she was like the only black woman on the X-Men. I almost feel like maybe they were afraid to give her too much of any kind of personality.
Yeah, she has to be everything to every black woman reader.
Exactly. Yeah. And I love her. I don't want to, you know, she's a difficult...
She cosplays a great Storm while we're at it.
She's a difficult character to write, and so it was like the two of them together, it was like, yes! Now they're apart. No. But I think one of my favorites, and probably from being a kid, Rogue and Gambit.
Yes. Mm.
So here you have this like dandy sort of I spend so much more time on my hair than you do kind of guy, who's, you know, he's a floater. He kind of goes around and you can tell that he's just not a person who's very dedicated. And then you have this very like strong but standoffish, like don't touch me, I don't shake hands kind of gal because I'll steal your life sort of person. And they want to be together and it can't happen and you want it so bad. Yes. It's just like, oh please, Gambit, just keep talking with your New Orleans accent.
And you know their relationship is like her eating a bowl of cereal in the doorway while he's like putting mascara on.
Exactly.
Like, I live for it.
And she's doing his eyebrows.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for that image. And we are not going to top that image. Thought this there. Guys, stick around in the Connie Moses Wild Room for 2:30 Making Comics 101, including Jeremy Whitley and Afua Richardson, who you just met here, as well as Dave Blanch.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah!
And before we go, have a big hand for our panelists. Thank you so much for coming. Buy their stuff. Find them out there. They will talk to you more, I promise. And be good to each other.
Yes.
Bye.
Oh, they're sticking. I'm leaving. I'm A113 if you want to come find me.
Yay.
I'm in the 600s right next to Afua, wherever that is.
Everyone is on the other dang old side of this place for me.
I'll be roaming around in various costumes. Well,
you're my Jeremy. Thanks. I'm going to come visit you guys later.
Yes.
I'm at 113. It's on the other side. But I've got my heavy with me, so he can watch the table if I need to.